Hello, hello, hello. Here's Marlanka with another episode on Auroville Radio. This time from Sri Aurobindo, The Riddle of This World. It is not to be denied. No spiritual experience will deny that this is an unideal and unsatisfactory world, strongly marked with the stamp of inadequacy, suffering, evil. Indeed, this perception is, in a way, the starting point of the spiritual urge. Except for the few to whom the greater experience comes spontaneously, without being forced to it by the strong or overwhelming, the afflicting and detaching sense of the shadow overhanging the whole range of this manifested existence. But still, the question remains, whether this is indeed, as is contended, the essential character of all manifestation, or, so long at least as there is a physical world, it must be of this nature, so that the desire of birth, the will to manifest or create, has to be regarded as the original sin, and a withdrawal from birth or manifestation as the sole possible way of salvation. For those who perceive it so, or with some kindred look, and these have been the majority, there are well-known ways of issue, a straight cut to spiritual deliverance. But equally, it may not be so, but only seem so to our ignorance, or to a partial knowledge. The imperfection, the evil, the suffering may be a besetting circumstance or a dolorous passage, but not the very condition of manifestation, not the very essence of birth in nature. And if so, the highest wisdom will lie not in escape, but in the urge towards a victory here, in a consenting association with the will behind the world, in a discovery of the spiritual gate to perfection, which will be at the same time an opening for the entire descent of the divine light, knowledge, power, beatitude. All spiritual experience affirms that there is a permanent above the transience of this manifested world we live in. And this limited consciousness, in whose narrow borders we grope and struggle, and that its characters are infinity, self-existence, freedom, absolute light, absolute beatitude. Is there then an unbridgeable gulf between that which is beyond and that which is here? Or are they two perpetual opposites, and only by leaving this adventure in time behind, by overleaping the gulf, can men reach the eternal? That is what seems to be at the end of one line of experience, which has been followed to its rigorous conclusion by Buddhism, and a little less rigorously by a certain type of monistic spirituality, which admits some connection of the world with the divine, but still opposes them in the last resort to each other as truth and illusion. But there's also this other and indubitable experience that the divine is here in everything, as well as above, and behind everything, that all is in that, and is that when we go back from its appearance to its reality. It is a significant and illumining fact that the Nora Brahman, even moving and acting in this world, even bearing all its shocks, can live in some absolute peace, light, and beatitude of the divine. There is then here something other than that mere trenchant opposition. There's a mystery, a problem which one would think must admit of some less desperate solution. This spiritual possibility points beyond itself and brings a ray of hope into the darkness of our fallen existence. At once, a first question arises. Is this world an unchanging succession of the same phenomena always, or is there in it an evolutionary urge, an evolutionary fact, a ladder of ascension somewhere from an original apparent inconscience to a more and more developed consciousness, from each development still ascending, emerging on highest heights not yet within our normal reach? If so, what is the sense, the fundamental principle, the logical issue of that progression? Everything seems to point to such a progression as a fact, to a spiritual and not merely a physical evolution. Here, too, there is a justifying line of spiritual experience in which we discover that the inconscient, from which all starts, is apparent only. For in it, there is an involved consciousness with endless possibilities, a consciousness not limited, but cosmic and infinite, a concealed and self-imprisoned divine, imprisoned in matter, but with every potentiality held in its secret depths. Out of this apparent unconscious, each potentiality is revealed in its turn. First, organized matter, concealing the indwelling spirit. Then life, emerging in the plant and associated in the animal with a growing mind. Then mind itself evolved and organized in man. This evolution, this spiritual progression, does it stop short here in the imperfect mental being called man? Or is the secret of it simply a succession of rebirths whose only purpose or issue is to labor towards the point at which it can learn its own futility, renounce itself, and take its leap into some original unborn existence or non-existence? There is at least the possibility. There comes at a certain point the certitude that there is a far greater consciousness than what we call mind. And by ascending the ladder still farther, we can find a point in which the hold of the material inconscience, the vital and mental ignorance, ceases. A principle of consciousness becomes capable of manifestation, which liberates, not partially, not imperfectly, but radically and wholly, this imprisoned divine. In this vision, each stage of evolution appears as due to the descent of a higher and higher power of consciousness, raising the terrestrial level, creating a new stratum. But the highest yet remain to descend, and it is by their descent that the riddle of terrestrial existence will receive its solution. And not only the soul, but nature herself find her deliverance. This is the truth, which has been seen in flashes, in more and more entirety of its terms, by the line of seers whom the Tantra would call the hero seekers and the divine seekers, and which may now be nearing the point of readiness for its full revelation and experience. Then, whatever be the heavy weight of strife and suffering and darkness in the world, yet if there is this as its high result awaiting us? All that has gone before may not be counted too great a price by the strong and adventurous for the glory that is to come. At any rate, the shadow lifts. There is a divine light which leans over the world, and is not only a far-off, incommunicable luster. It is true that the problem still remains why all this, that yet it should still have been necessary. These crude beginnings, this long and stormy passage, why should the heavy and tedious price be demanded? Why should evil and suffering ever have been there? For to the how of the fall into the ignorance, as opposed to the why, the effective cause, there is a substantial agreement in all spiritual experience. It is the division, the separation, the principle of isolation from the permanent and one that brought it about. It is because the ego set up for itself in the world, emphasizing its own desire and self-affirmation in preference to its unity with the divine and its oneness with all. It is because instead of the one supreme force, wisdom, light, determining the harmony of all forces, each idea, force, form of things was allowed to work itself out as far as it could in the mass of infinite possibilities by its separate will, and inevitably in the end by conflict with others. Division, ego, the imperfect consciousness and groping and struggle of a separate self-affirmation are the efficient cause of the suffering and ignorance of this world. Once consciousness separated from the one consciousness, they fell inevitably into ignorance, and the last result of ignorance was inconscience. From a dark, immense inconscient, this material world arises, and out of it, a soul that by evolution is struggling toward consciousness, attracted towards the hidden light, ascending but still blindly towards the last lost divinity from which it came. But why should this have happened at all? One common way of putting the question and answering it ought to be eliminated from the first. The human way and its ethical revolt and reprobation and its emotional outcry. For it is not, as some religions suppose, a supracosmic, arbitrary, personal deity himself altogether uninvolved in the fall, who has imposed evil and suffering on creatures made capriciously by his fiat. The divine we know is an infinite being in whose infinite manifestation these things have come. It is the divine itself that is here, behind us, pervading the manifestation, supporting the world with its oneness. It is the divine that is in us, upholding itself the burden of the fall and its dark consequences. If above it stands forever in its perfect light, bliss, and peace, it is also here. Its light, bliss, and peace are secretly here, supporting all. In ourselves, there is a spirit, a central presence greater than the series of surface personalities, which, like the Supreme Divine itself, is not overborne by the fate they endure. If we find out this divine within us, If we know ourselves as the Spirit, which is of one essence and being with the divine, that is our gate of deliverance. And in it we can remain ourselves even in the midst of this world's disharmonies, luminous, blissful, and free. That much is the age-old testimony of spiritual experience. But still, what is the purpose and origin of the disharmony? Why came this division, this ego, this world of a painful evolution? Why must evil and sorrow enter into the divine good, bliss, and peace? It is hard to answer to the human intelligence on its own level, for the consciousness to which the origin of this phenomenon belongs, and to which it stands, as it were, automatically justified in a supra-intellectual knowledge, is a cosmic and not an individualized human intelligence. It sees in larger spaces. It has another vision and cognition, other terms of consciousness than human reason and feeling. To the human mind, one might answer that while in itself the infinite might be free from those perturbations, yet once manifestation began, infinite possibility also began. And among the infinite possibilities which it is the function of the universal manifestation to work out, the negation, the apparent effective negation, with all its consequences, of the power, light, peace, bliss, was very evidently one. If it is asked why, even if possible, it should have been accepted, the answer nearest to the cosmic truth which the human intelligence can make is that in the relations, or in the transition of the divine in the oneness to the divine in the many, this ominous possible became at a certain point inevitable. For once it appears, it acquires for the soul descending into evolutionary manifestation an irresistible attraction, which creates the inevitability. An attraction which, in human terms, on the terrestrial level, might be interpreted as the call of the unknown, the joy of danger, difficulty, adventure, the will to attempt the impossible, to work out the incalculable, the will to create the new and the uncreated with one's own self and life as the material. Why the fascination of contradictories and their difficult harmonization? These things, translated into another supraphysical, superhuman consciousness, higher and wider than the mental, these were the temptation that led to the fall. To the original being of light on the verge of the descent, the one thing unknown was the depths of the abyss, the possibilities of the divine in the ignorance and in conscience. On the other side from the divine oneness, a vast acquiescence, compassionate, consenting, helpful, a supreme knowledge that this thing must be, that having appeared, it must be worked out, that its appearance is, in a certain sense, part of an incalculable infinite wisdom. If the plunge into night was inevitable, the emergence into a new, unprecedented day was also a certitude. And that only so could a certain manifestation of the supreme truth be effected. by a working out with its phenomenal opposites as the starting point of the evolution, as the condition laid down for a transforming emergence. In this acquiescence was braced to the will of the great sacrifice, the descent of the divine itself into inconscience to take up the burden of the ignorance and its consequences, to intervene as the avatar, the vibhuti, walking between the double sign of the cross and the victory towards the fulfillment and deliverance. A two-imaged rendering of the inexpressible truth, you may ask? But without images, how to present to the intellect a mystery far beyond it? It's only when one has crossed the barrier of the limited intelligence and shared in the cosmic experience and the knowledge which sees things from identity that the supreme realities which lie behind these images, images corresponding to the terrestrial fact, that they assume their divine forms and are felt as simple, natural, implied in the essence of things. It is by entering into that greater consciousness alone that one can grasp the inevitability of its self-creation and its purpose. This is indeed only the truth of the manifestation as it presents itself to the consciousness when it stands on the borderline between eternity and the descent into time, where the relation between the one and the many in the evolution is self-determined, a zone where all that is to be is implied but not yet in action. But the liberated consciousness can rise higher where the problem exists no longer, and from there see it in the light of a supreme identity, where all is predetermined in the automatic self-existent truth of things and self-justified to an absolute consciousness and wisdom, an absolute delight which is behind all creation and non-creation, and the affirmation and negation are both seen with the eyes of the ineffable reality that delivers and reconciles them. But that knowledge is not expressible to the human mind. Its language of light is too undecipherable, the light itself too bright for a consciousness accustomed to the stress and obscurity of the cosmic riddle, entangled in it, how to follow the clue or to grasp its secret. In any case, it is only when we rise in the spirit beyond the zone of the darkness and the struggle that we can enter into the full significance of it, and then there is a deliverance of the soul from its enigma. To rise to that height of liberation is the true way out and the only means of the indubitable knowledge. This seems like a good place to pause for this episode. Thank you so much for tuning into Auroville Radio to this reading of Sri Aurobindo, The Riddle of the World, to be continued in the next episode. Bye for now. Marlenka signing out.
This is Auroville Radio, voices from the City of Dome.